and welcome to another episode of Demimonde Paranormal Podcast. As some of you might know, I'm your host, Tori, from Demimonde Paranormal, a private paranormal and supernatural group on Facebook.com where we cover all things supernatural. In today's episode, we will be talking about three major topics. The first topic will be about Appalachian mountain magic or folk magic. Our second topic will be about the Marietta Witch of Marietta, Pennsylvania. And our third and final topic of tonight's episode will be about a very famous rock formation up in the Pennsylvania mountains, known as Witch's Head, or if you prefer to hear it in German, Hexenkamp. So join me, won't you, as we dive into the very interesting and very mysterious history of witches in Pennsylvania. Welcome, everyone, to the first topic of tonight's episode, which will be affectionately nicknamed Granny Magic. But before we dive right in, let me ask you guys a question. How many of y'all have ever heard of Granny Magic or Appalachian Granny Magic? If you haven't, don't worry, because I haven't for a really long time before I just decided to look up mountain folk magic. And this is how I came across what is called Granny Magic. But anyway, actually, I'm going to tell you guys a little story. What made me think about mountain magic or mountain folk magic was this movie that I watched about last year, and it's called Seven Souls. No, I'm sorry, it wasn't called Seven Souls. It was called Six Souls, and it had Julianne Moore in it. And basically, what it was about this one lady who goes up to the mountains. Actually, Julianne Moore plays a dedicated psychiatrist who is skeptical when she learns the nature of a certain affliction from a guy who is said to have multiple personality disorders. And this guy was said to have killed someone, and he was facing the death penalty. And basically, she starts giving away her skepticism little by little during the movie, and that's all I'm gonna tell you guys without, you know, giving too much away. But if you guys ever want to check it out, it's called Six Souls, and it has Julianne Moore in it. She stars in it, and it was okay. It was actually about Appalachian root magic, which I found really interesting. But yeah, if you're ever bored enough and you want to check out a new film, or this film isn't actually that new, it was released in 2013, so it's a few years old, but, you know, it might be new to you. Anyway, before we get off track, let's go back to what we were talking about before, Granny Magic. So what exactly is Appalachian Granny Magic, or Granny Witchcraft? The name Granny Magic is actually pretty new, but the customs go back a long time. It's a combination between folk magic, faith healing, and superstitions. Granny Magic was often the only source of aid for people in remote, isolated regions, such as the mountains of Pennsylvania, especially. As in European settlers who arrived in the colonies during the 16th century, they brought with them the traditional folk magic and healing properties of their home and countries. Now, this was primarily women. These healers used those concepts they learned back in Scotland, England, and Ireland. Once they settled in, they met their Native American neighbors, who taught them about the plants, roots, leaves, and indigenous plants to the mountains of North Carolina, Tennessee, and beyond. They also blended their practice with German immigrants, who arrived in Pennsylvania and began migrating south and west. And soon they began incorporating the knowledge brought to the mountains by the people of African descent who escaped slavery in the South. So, traditional granny magic included a lot of different practices, dousing the practice of looking into water for or with a forked stick or a length of copper, and that was a valuable way to have a skill if you or your neighbors needed to dig a new well. Practitioners often tended to the needs of women as they worked as midwives and assisted the births of newborn babies. But this could also be accounted upon to provide herbal remedies if a young woman didn't want to become pregnant. In areas that rarely had access to professional medical care, the granny witch worked as a healer, crafting poultices and salves and teas and curative properties. Divination could be done in the remains of the tea or coffee grounds in the bottom of a cup. So anyway, because of the religious environment of the Appalachian region, in which nearly everyone was staunchly Protestant, most of the people practicing what we today would call granny magic would have disagreed that what they were doing was in fact witchcraft. In fact, many charms and spells included invocations of psalms, prayers, and verses from the Bible. And so many of the granny magic traditions of the mountains share some common ground with the folk magic found in other parts of the world, depending on what part of Appalachia someone lives in, and the traditions that have been handed down to them from one generation to another, or a practitioner of granny magic might follow a variety of practices. In addition to magical traditions, many of the granny women of the past served as healers and midwives, as we've mentioned before. The granny woman would have arrived at a home of a mother in labor with a bag of herbs, roots, and leaves. She would use these to help the mother safely deliver a child, and then she might recite a verse from the Bible or even a protective charm to keep the mother and baby healthy, especially in a time of high infant mortality. Because mountain dwellers were so often nowhere near a doctor's office, and the cost of professional medical treatment was so prohibitive, it was often fell on the local woman to provide health care for their neighbors, setting broken bones and even treating fevers, and caring for the terminally ill. So, even in today's world, there has been a resurgence in interest in the granny magic tradition. Although it never really went away in Appalachia, needless to say, as more and more people in the mountains try to hold on to their traditional customs, granny magic seems to be becoming popular once more, although it's unlikely that it'll ever truly go mainstream, or so as we know. After all, the cultural context and awareness of Appalachian life is a key component of the practice. So I guess it's best to believe that Appalachian folk magic is very closely related to hoodoo, but not voodoo. Hoodoo is a cross between many cultures, whereas voodoo primarily comes from Haiti and not a mix between Native American, European, and African. The official village witch of Asheville, North Carolina is H. Byron Billard. He was also an author. She works hard to educate people about the traditional mountain customs and ensure the legacy of their Appalachian ancestors. So, further on, now all of these traditions take place in a Christian context with granny magic, with a very Christian understanding of the universe. This is a world of Protestant Christianity focused on heavily on personal salvation and even the possibility of damnation, which is where people who are willingly gave up a place in heaven for power on earth. These were most often women, sometimes men, who had sold their souls to the devil. That was the traditional idea of what a witch was. This was a rejection or even a subversion of both the natural and social order. It was a rejection of everything that was held to be good and just in the culture, which is could even be seen to represent the possibility that the established order might not be the only possible one. A prospect which, in a society where economic and social insecurity were real and constant dangers, and can be a profoundly frightening one. Now, these actions would such be with dire consequences. Selling your soul was surprisingly easily. One of the most common ways mentioned to become a witch was to climb top of hill at dawn, taking a handkerchief and a loaded pistol with you. Holding aloft a handkerchief, curse God three times, then shoot a bullet through the handkerchief. If blood flows from the hole of the handkerchief, it signals that your acceptance as a witch was granted. Now, there is very little recorded folklore from the 19th or even the first part of the 20th century from the perspective of anyone who has considered or considered themselves a witch. This includes a noticeable absence of any of the expected trappings of European witchcraft. No covens gathering at night or witches' sabbats. No goat men, books, or elaborate ceremonies. Witchcraft in the mountains is a much more stripped down, economical, and seemingly mostly solo affair. Accounts of good or even white witchcraft was quite rare. Part of this was due to the nature of the religious beliefs in the area, in which faith healing was considered to be very, very real. This reduced the need for healers, a substantial part of the role of good witches, in order for traditions. Magical healing specialists were particularly needed when anyone with sufficient faith was considered a potential magical healer. Where a tradition of good witchcraft does come up in the Appalachians, it's usually specialized services like removing curses or dousing for water. These rules are, perhaps tellingly, almost always filled by men and almost always inherited in some way. The seventh son of a seventh son was in particular considered naturally magically gifted, an important distinction from the witch who acquired her powers. Being born with the abilities made them a gift from God and therefore acceptable. The witch bent the natural order, the good wizard was a part of it. In An important exception of this general rule existed among the African American communities in the region. where the conjure and hoodoo traditions were much more open to accepting the supernatural hope of root workers. There's also recorded instances of white people calling, occasionally discreetly, for these services. So, needless to say, as we move into modern times, the idea of the witch is changing, as it was traditionally seen as a threat and a scary entity. Now it is seen as more of a source of social and political empowerment. Now many women are now embracing the title of witch and recasting the role outside the traditional Christian context. In North Carolina, this has meant looking at ideas of herbal medicine, folk healing, and the idea of said granny magic. While many of these guides may not be strictly traditional, they are part of an emerging tradition as the folklore of North Carolina mountains continues to grow and change as the culture changes. It moves into a future where the witch may be a figure of hope instead of fear. And our second segment for tonight's episode will be about the Marietta Witch, the River Witch of Marietta, and the Curse of Hex Hollow. So this little piece of history that I'm about to tell you guys may quite excite or even satisfy, I think is the better word, all you autumn lovers out here, that this story takes place around Thanksgiving time, Thanksgiving Eve of 1928. But before I tell you guys the story of the River Witch, tell me, what is your guys' favorite season? Is it summer, autumn, spring, or winter? Let me know down in the comments. Me personally, I've got to say that it's summer first, and then autumn, then spring, and then winter. But that's just me. Also, what is your favorite month out of the whole year? And tell me why. Leave a comment down below, and we'll have a little discussion if you want. But for right now, let's begin the story. So, it's said on the night of Thanksgiving Eve in 1928, three men stormed into the home of Nelson Raymeyer, and the horror that they left behind spread like wildfire all over the nation. Now there were talks of murder, witchcraft, and it had the people of York County in Marietta cast into a dark web of fear. As the story begins, John Blymeyer was a man down on his luck. His wife had left him, and the loss of his two children left him struggling to hold employment. And he was always searching for an answer as to why. When he found his way to Marietta within the company of Nellie Knoll, John and Nellie both practiced the old Pennsylvania Dutch religion of powwows. Far from the Native American practice, powwowing was a variety of ritual folk magic practiced by the Pennsylvania Dutch, much of which was rooted in the book of the Long Lost Friend, published by German author John George Hohmann in 1820, which represented a collection of remedies, recipes, and charms to cure ailments and domestic troubles. Now John sought the advice of the River Witch of Marietta, who had placed a single dollar bill onto his palm and declared that upon removal, the key to all of his problems would be revealed. Now once the bill was removed, John believed that he saw the likeness of Nelson Raymeyer. Now, Nelson Raymeyer himself was a self-proclaimed witch doctor who resided in a two-story house within what is now Spring Valley Park, which is also known as Hex Hollow. He was a farmer by day, but a total reckless by night. Raymeyer also led a life of misfortunes. He was once married. His wife left him after becoming sick of the obsession that Nelson had with white magic. Alice Raymeyer packed up her things and took both her daughters, leaving Nelson to dwell within his home alone. Now John now believed that Raymeyer was the cause of all of his problems. Cursed by a friend and fellow powwower, in order to break the curse, Nellie instructed John to steal Nelson's copy of The Long-Lost Friend and burn it. John was also instructed to cut a lock of Nelson's hair and bury it 6 feet within the ground. Once these two tasks were accomplished, the curse would be lifted and John's luck would turn around. Now, John left and recruited two teenagers that he had befriended. One was named John Curry, who was 14, and the other one was Wilbert Hess, who was 18, to help him on his mission. And so, that night, the trio arrived at Nelson Raymeyer's home, knocking on the door. Now, Raymeyer let all three without question into his home, and upon entering Nelson's home, John demanded to see Nelson's copy of The Long Last Friend. And with this, Nelson refused to produce the book, and he denied any ownership of the book. John and his two accomplices proceeded to tie Nelson up and bludgeon him to death. The three men then proceeded to douse Nelson's body with kerosene and set it ablaze. Believing that the curse was finally lifted, John and the two boys fled the scene. Oddly enough, Nelson's body in his old wooden house did not burn, and his body was discovered the next day after concerned neighbors noticed that the animals on his farm were unfed. John Curry, and Wilbert Hess were quickly apprehended and stood trial for the murder of Nelson Raymeyer. All three were found guilty and sentenced to life behind bars, and they were later paroled. All three men went on to live normal lives. Now to this day, Hex Hollow is now owned by the great-grandson of Nelson Raymeyer. The two-story house still remains with its charred floorboards and a clock above the stove, frozen forever at 12:01 midnight. And that is the story of the Marietta River Witch. I hope you guys liked that story, and I will see you guys in our third and final segment of tonight's episode. And welcome to our third and final segment for tonight's episode. I don't know about you guys, but does something about this episode make you want, like, Pennsylvania Dutch apple pie in, like, the worst way ever? Because it definitely does it to me. Like, ever since I was doing the research for tonight, I thought to myself, oh my god, I would kill for some apple pie. Especially with some caramel drizzled on top with a nice crumble crust and perfect sweet apples. I mean, sometimes I just get the worst hankering for apple pie with a little bit of vanilla ice cream. But maybe that's just me. Anyway, on to our last topic for tonight, which is something known as Witch's Head, or Hexenkopf Rock. Now, this is located in Pennsylvania. Now, Hexham Kopf is a large hilly cluster of rocks that you probably would walk right past if you didn't know the long history of witchcraft and evil spirits and even death that is associated with this cluster of rocks. And did I mention that there's even curses associated with this rock formation? Native American tribes performed several rituals of healing there, drawing the evil spirits out of the sick and entrapping them in the rock. Now, according to legend, these mountains are said to glow from all the evil spirits trapped inside them. Now, many skeptics believe that the glow could be attributed to something of the mica being in the rocks of the mountains, which gives it that eerie glow. Even early Pennsylvania German settlers who called it Misery Mountain began holding their form of healing summer ceremonies there, called powwows. But during the 18th century and up until the 1950s, local powwowers healed the sick by drawing the evil spirits out of them and putting them in the rock, much like their Native American predecessors. Now, even to this day, some say these evil spirits have escaped the rocks and now roam the surrounding woods. Strange things have also been always associated with the rocks in the surrounding area. There has been tales of witches dancing around a tree at the summit of the rock. There has been ghostly lights and strange sounds coming from the distant feeling of somebody right beside you as you walk through the surrounding woods. All these stories are told by visitors who had dared to visit Witch's Head Rock. Now, historical records seem to confirm that there was witchcraft afoot in Williams Township in the 1860s. A widow in the area was accused of causing a neighbor's white horse to become sick by cursing it. Court records indicate that she denied being a witch at first, but then admitted that she was actually a witch in later time. She was found guilty and sentenced to 1 year imprisonment and the humiliation of standing at the pillory. My husband was also accused. He accused his wife of practicing witchcraft when he saw her rub herself with an ointment and recite an incantation, hop on a broomstick, and vanish. Is this the most fantastical thing you guys have ever read? Or heard, rather. Curious, he repeated the process and found himself transported to Hexham Kopf Rock, where he landed in the middle of a witch's dance. The next thing he knew, he woke up dazed in a neighbor's pig pen. There is also the tale of a ghost of a headless hunter and his faithful headless dog, who have been seen roaming the woods for years, apparently in search of an eternally elusive white fox, which has also been spotted as well. Furthermore, there has been the tale of a ghostly one-legged farmer who apparently fell to his death off of the rocks while pursuing a witch. You can not only see him, but you can apparently also hear his wooden leg tapping on the rocks. Historically, people have lived near the rocks and said to have experienced an unusual high rate of fires, illnesses, bad luck, suicides, and insanity, as among as other woes as well. And furthermore, and more especially, Halloween night is especially when the rock is most active, I mean, surprise, surprise, with witches and evil spirits. Apparently, some of the people who have the guts to live near the rock won't even venture near it on Halloween night. Now, Hexenkopf Rock is located in Williams Township, about 6 miles south of Easton. From the I-78 exit of Easton, head south on Morgan Hill Road. And about 5 miles down the road is Hexenkopf Road on the right. Now, if you head south on the road, the rock will be on your left. Note that the rock is not always visible due to the denseness of the woods which is located. The rock is located on private property, which is marked with a do not trespassing sign. Thank you guys so much for joining me for tonight's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And like I said before, don't be afraid to leave a comment with all of your questions or concerns or any stories that you think that Demimonde Paranormal would like to hear. Don't be afraid to submit some of your supernatural or paranormal stories into Demimonde Paranormal podcast to share it with the rest of our listeners. That being said, if you're not a part of the Demimonde Paranormal family on Facebook.com, please consider doing so. We are a private paranormal group where we discuss all things paranormal. This includes hauntings and different types of ghosts and spirits, witches, vampires, witchcraft, werewolves, aliens, cryptids that include Bigfoot, you name it, we got it. So, if spooky, creepy, and dark history things are your type of cup of tea, please consider becoming a member to get all new exclusive content only available to members of Demimonde Paranormal. And with that being said, I wish you guys a good night or a good morning. And I hope to see you guys for an all-new episode of Demimonde Paranormal Podcast real soon. Stay safe, make good choices, be kind to one another, and as always, stay spooky.